Welcome back to the Juke Joint. I'm Aaron. That's Giggling Sean.
That's Giggling Sean. I'm Josh in the back.
And GA20 in studio.
Hey.
What's Hello? Going on?
Why don't you guys, since we haven't had a formal introduction, exactly. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves to the masses?
I'm Matt, the guitar player, Matt Stubbs.
I'm Pat, the guitar player and singer.
I'm Tim, the drummer.
Long names.
Mm-hmm. Hard to remember.
Should have been Tat, right? And you have,
Exactly.
Could have replaced him with someone with a T in the last letter, right?
That was...
As Louis just said, don't change an effing thing, right?
That was great sound.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And hearing it live, beyond hearing what her on the recordings, I mean, I could hear that all the way down the hall, and it was perfect.
Great.
So do you have any current recordings under GA20?
Yep, I think you guys actually play one. It's called Naggin' on My Mind. That's our single that came out in December.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And you also have another album out too, right?
Not GA20, my other
band.
Yep, the Antiguas. Yep, yes, sir.
So you guys came down here. We really appreciate that. But what brought you guys together in the first place? Because I was listening to you before you put this band together.
Yep.
So how did you guys initially meet?
Pat and I have been friends for about 5 years, I think. We met just local clubs in Boston, like blues jams and stuff, and we started hanging out. He was starting to get into blues back then and just became buddies. And then this past year, I had a slow year on the road. Charlie Musselwhite, who I tour with, was out with Ben Harper. So I had like an open year, which I haven't had for like 11 years, where I knew I could just kind of be around. And so we started this project just to kind of get some local dates, and it's kind of been getting popular ever since.
Now, speaking of local dates, when are you guys performing around here? Because anyone who caught that live is definitely going to want to see
you
around here.
Ask that. I have it written down right here. March 26th and 27th, we're playing at the House of Blues in Boston in the Foundation Room. We're doing the pre and after parties for the Gary Clark shows. So that's 26th and 27th. And then April 18th, we're right close to you guys at Chianti in Beverly. Yeah, that's a Thursday. And then the night after that, we're at Atwood's in Cambridge. So those are our next local shows.
Very good.
Great way to go and see great music after tax day to relax and enjoy.
Yeah. What day is tax day this week? Is it the 15th or is it different?
It is the 15th.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say they're relaxing after that.
Well, if they go and see you, they can go and relax and enjoy.
So stuff the tip jar.
So you guys are stressed out already. Who are your influences?
Pat, go ahead. Your influences.
My singing influences, I'd hope it would be noticeable that I listen to Magic Sam, J.B. Lenore.
Barbra Streisand.
a little bit of Katy Perry. As far as guitar goes, all the obvious ones, man, Buddy Guy, Magic Sam, T-Bone Walker.
Matthew Stubbs.
I wouldn't be lying if you said that. Because Matt was nice enough to kind of take me under his wing as I was just getting started. So I accidentally rip him off in a lot of my solos. Well, if you hear him, 5 nights a week for 3 hours, it kind of bleeds into your playing, whether you like it or not. So
is that really ripping him off or just acquiring the great sound?
You'll have to ask him that.
It's having good taste.
What about you? What are your influences, Tim?
I've been listening to a lot of Fred Below recently and Clifton James as well. Matt kind of took me under his wing too fairly recently and showed me, where to start with all the blues material. I've been a jazz drummer for a long time and I've played lots of other different styles. And I used to play with the Tokyo Tramps actually, which is a local band as
They've
well.
They've been so, here before.
Yeah, yeah. So, I've been just getting into the 50s and early 60s blues stuff a lot recently. So
you've got large wings, young man.
He does.
He's got two. That's why we're a trio.
Yeah.
So growing up, we'll start and go backwards. Who'd you listen to? Who were your influences? And what made you want to play music?
I grew up on like the Eagles and stuff like that. My parents were always playing that. My brother's a guitarist also, so I grew up playing in a punk band with him. And then from there, jazz, I studied Elvin Jones, Roy Haynes, all those guys. And then, yeah, always loved playing.
I had such a weird music taste growing up, because I would be in school, and in school bands I'd be playing jazz and R&B, and then I'd go home and I'd listen to all my Boston punk records, like Showcase Showdown, The Explosion, Toxic Narcotic, lots of bands like that. I also liked a few more 90s mainstream bands like Everclear and System of a Down. But I was also listening to a lot of thrash metal at the time. And then I got into playing Van Halen, and now I'm here.
I just grew up playing traditional blues as a kid. I didn't, but I liked Oasis, I think, for a minute. And, I really dug the Beatles. And then as I got older, I guess as I hit my late 20s, early 30s, when I started listening to all kinds of different music. But starting out, it was just, I had blinders on probably for the first 10 years of playing guitar. It's only blues, traditional blues.
So how'd your family feel about playing music?
My father's a musician, so he loves it. He comes out, still comes out to a ton of shows. All our parents actually come out when they can. So I think they like it. Yeah. my father has a band locally for years and collects guitars, and, you know, so it's fun.
So what do you think you'd be doing if you weren't playing
Probably
music?
Selling cars. I sold cars for, like, that's the only job I've ever. I had a couple sales jobs when I was, like, when I dropped out of school, out of college, and I did some sales jobs for about a year, and I really enjoyed it.
Better selling the sound than selling the cars.
I know, whatever, man. I like sales.
It's cool. See you as a good car salesman.
I did pretty good. Yeah. I did pretty good for those 8 months.
With or without the guitar.
Oh, no, I had no guitar. I was just
that would be
closing
cool.
The deals.
Yeah.
Sitting on the side of the road playing the music. And
did you guys have any formal musical
background? Yeah, we all went to Berkeley. Okay. I mean, so we're all, we all did that.
You got a lot of Berkeley kids in here, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll happen.
There's a lot of them. Yeah. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, now I have a question for you, because this is something I ask all the kids who go to Berkeley. Do you feel that it was really a competitive atmosphere in Berkeley? And did that affect you in any way, you know, playing there or leaving there?
These guys were there longer than me. I enjoyed it. It's very expensive. I didn't like have a scholarship or anything, so it was super pricey. I left just because I wanted to perform, and, you know, so I left. And for a year after school, I just kind of did private study with a bunch of people that taught what I wanted to learn. It was much cheaper. Looking back, I probably would have stayed a little longer, and probably, I think you just got to find the right crew in Berkeley. It's very easy, I think, to study under maybe people that aren't the best. There's not that there's all great teachers there, but you got to really know who you want to study with, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some great teachers there.
Anytime you have a grade that you have to practice and study for, regardless of the field, there's always going to be an underlying competitiveness in that field. There's only so many gigs and there's so many players. You just have to be extremely careful that when you go into the real world and you play professionally, you don't play like you're competing for a grade. And I think too many people, they get caught up in that culture. So then they go play a show, and every song that they play, they're trying to prove that they know a bunch of stuff instead of playing a song, you know? So hopefully your first year of professional gigging, you learn that very quick, that you can't just, you know, blow everything on the first song.
Mm. So what else would you be doing, do you think, if you weren't?
I'd be living in a car that Matt Stubbs sold me.
With or without heat?
Without the guitar.
No guitar.
No guitar.
Well, if I wouldn't be playing guitar, I'd be living in a car.
Oh, that's awesome. Where would I be? Plumbing, probably. My dad owns a plumbing company. So thank God I started playing drums.
A couple months ago, we had the Salem Wolves in here, and we were having this interesting discussion on blues and blues tradition, and how copyright and constant, the drilling down of music to ownership is sort of destroying the tradition. Do you guys agree or disagree with that? Any ideas on that?
I don't know. I don't really have I don't know enough, I don't think, about copyright law.
Well, it's not just copyright law, but the era of making a song and then having Hoochie Coochie Man, mm-hmm. to Manish Boy, that sort of tradition is sort of gone. because no one wants to alter anyone's lyrics or do anything like that for fear of getting sued. Do you ever feel like you can't touch music or?
No.
I'm a little confused by the question though. So can you elaborate on that?
Well, if you look at the way that music, I mean, just recently with the whole Marvin Gaye suit, I'm sure you're
familiar. Blurred Lines.
Yeah, Blurred Lines. No matter what your opinion is on that song, you know, that the beat, some would say, isn't close enough to be really suable, and some people are arguing that that is destroying music and the tradition of music.
I agree. The trick is to only make enough money on a song that it's not worth hiring those lawyers to sue.
Very easy to do that these days. Make no money on that. I don't know the ins and outs of that, the actual lawsuit. It's funny, I was in my car the other day, my girlfriend, I was listening to that. A friend of mine is actually a songwriter and produces stuff with Robin Thicke. So I saw him play in Providence the other night. And after that, I went back and listened to the Marvin Gaye song and the Pharrell tune. I guess Pharrell was...
Pharrell wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I always thought it was X amount of notes with the melody and the rhythm that is what you're going like to play. I was surprised that they were able to get it just because of like the vibe of it. When I listen to it, it sounds kind of different. It sounds like it was inspired by it, which is with blues. I mean, there's lots of things like a slow blues or a shuffle or whatever. Like it would be crazy to me to think like, oh, we're a blues band playing a shuffle and getting sued by somebody because it's a shuffle, but I guess it's, I don't know, they won, so they had something.
So if each one of you could play with anybody from the past or present, who would it be?
Charlie Christian.
Come back to me. That's a tough one.
I don't know. You ask me past or present, right? Because that's totally, I don't know. Yeah. There'd be
present.
I could play with anyone right now. No, man. I don't know. I'd like to play with Beck. Beck Hansen. Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think he's the coolest.
I'd say Dawes. They're a band I really like. Or Steely Dan. That'd be a pretty amazing gig to get.
So having played jazz and now blues, I mean, they work very well together.
Yeah.
Did you find anything that seemed different, though, transitioning from one to the other?
I find that playing blues has actually helped my jazz playing a lot, because a lot of the times, especially when I was younger and playing jazz, I wanted to just to fit as many notes as I could, you know, broken triplets around the drums, all that stuff. But with blues, it's all about feel. And everything has to feel good, and that translates into any style. So I think as a player, I've matured a lot just trying to make sure everything I play feels good and every note I play has a purpose, and not just trying to play lots of notey things like you might do at Berkeley or something like that. So
looking back on where you said you each came from, would you want to record anything in that genre in the future on your own?
You mean the different genres we do?
Well, what you listened to, what you grew up listening to that you enjoyed. I mean, would you want to, you know, have a side project and...
Well, I mean, I'm currently in two death metal bands, and I've been in a few hardcore bands. Yeah. So really? I've already done that.
I think we all have.
I think we all have. Like, Tim's making a record under his own name.
Yeah.
I have the Antiguas thing, and we have this. So, yeah, the answer to your question is yes.
Currently finishing a death metal album right now.
Really?
Yes.
Well, we've got some albums coming out in the future that we'd love to have you guys back in with.
Hell. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
I was going to say, Matt, due to the fact that you have the Antiguas, and so to me, that is a genre unto itself. It's like a flashback to the 60s.
Take anyone's head off with that microphone.
Say, it's dangerous. Watch that.
That's why it's called a boom mic.
How did you fall into that realm or...
The Antiguas stuff?
Yeah.
So 2008, I started making instrumental records. I think that was when my first one came out. So the first two records were just under my name, Matthew Stubbs, and it was more... soul-based, Memphis soul-based 60s music, kind of like the Marquees with horns. Short songs, not a lot of soul. I mean, they were soloing, but it was very melodic-based. And it kind of just grew from that. I don't sing, so it was through instrumental music. And then a few years ago, I started writing stuff that didn't really fit into that sound of those two records totally. So I wanted to give it a different name. So I called it the Antiguas, just to kind of, there's more percussion. There's no horns on it. It's organ guitar and drums and bass. So
what made you choose the name? Not your own, but the
Antiguas. It's actually Fender guitars had a color, I think it was in the early 70s, called Antigua. And it was this really kind of ugly moss color sunburst. And I love it. So I just came up with that. And it kind of, I feel like you hear that and you hear the music and it somehow makes sense. Kind of islandy.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. No,
right.
One of the songs you do on the album is Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you closed your eyes, saw you guys play, didn't see you on the stage, but we're sitting there and so forth. It's like a Quentin Tarantino.
Well, cool. It was successful then. That's why, yeah. I love scores and movies, old movies. And, you know, for a modern guy, I really like Quentin stuff. So, yeah, that's why I named it that.
Have you ever been approached to do soundtracks or anything like that?
Not yet. I'd love to, though. Okay. Yeah.
If you're listening out there, Quentin, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I hear he's doing a new movie.
Yeah. Escaping from me. where does the name GA20 come from? I figure that's a common question you guys get.
It is.
So common.
It's an amplifier made by Gibson. I guess it started in the late 40s, like 49 was the first one, and then up through the 60s. So it just stands for Gibson amplifier. And then the 20 is the size. They have all different sizes.
I believe you were playing one today.
Yep. Yeah. I play one on most of the gigs. Yep.
So again, where can people get your music, and where are you going to be playing in the near future?
So right now, we just have the single out. You can get it on all the streaming or download sites, Apple, Amazon. You can listen to it on Spotify. It's on Bandcamp, too. The record, we have a 45 coming out. I think it's going to drop in August. And then the whole full album, which is done but is getting manufactured now, it comes out in the fall, probably October. And then we're playing next gigs March 26th and 7th at the House of Blues Foundation Room, the 18th at Chianti Jazz here in Beverly, and then the 19th at Atwoods in Cambridge.
You're taking over the Fenway area right before the Sox come back.
It looks that way.
So from one hit to another.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys for coming in. Do anyone else have any more questions, comments, concerns before we...
we don't have any
plan.
No callers? Right. We don't have any callers? I was hoping for some callers.
There was. The phone did ring.
It rang three times.
Calling about your car warranty.
Is that guy still selling cars?
Yeah, the engine fell out. Yeah. Right. They hit a pothole.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming down. We're going to go heft all this stuff up the stairs. No, just kidding. We have an elevator. So, once again, GA20, thank you so much for coming down. We'll be sure to be playing your music for the near future and the far future.
Looking forward to the new albums that are coming out from each one of you and together. And love to have you guys back real soon.
Let's do it.
You guys have a standing invitation to come down here anytime you guys
want.
Thank you very much.
You've got a show coming up this week, don't you?
On Tuesday, yeah. I'm going to be playing a lot of Irish music and probably talking about the whole controversy locally with the SHA housing taking $5,000 for a private party that would have happened if they hadn't had such a public outroar. So we'll be talking about that, and I'm going to attempt to get councilmen in the next couple weeks to discuss the major problems that we've been having with this whole vote on the releasing of funds and buildings for zoning. They just basically put themselves into a $1 million hole, the city did, by not releasing a building for zoning. So I'm going to probably be talking about that, and we'll have some Irish music, some blues, as usual, maybe some Dead, and we'll see. I only got an hour now, so things just got to be very compact.
Well, we're going to go to Eric Clapton and the great B.B. King in a car that Matthew Stubbs sold them to be riding with the King. Enjoy.